May it please the court. My name is Michael Mattis. My registration number is 37869, and I'm here on behalf of Mr. Asim Abdullah. Mr. Abdullah was convicted by a jury of aggravated robbery and felony murder. Now, as is emphasized in the opening brief and conceded by the state in its answer, the outcome of this case was totally dependent on the jury's determination of witness credibility. In sum, Mr. Abdullah testified that Kelly shot the victim in an unplanned robbery. On the other hand, Kelly testified that Mr. Abdullah shot the victim in a planned robbery. Now, the question in this appeal is whether there's a reasonable probability that the errors detailed in the opening brief affected the jury's credibility determination. Now, while I'd like this court to analyze all the errors in the opening brief in a cumulative manner, I would like to focus my arguments today on Section 1 of the opening brief. Section 1 concerns the erroneous admission of a videotaped interview of a very important witness named Adora Loftus. Loftus's testimony was crucial to the state's case because she was the only witness that corroborated Kelly's version of the events. In other words, she was the tie-breaking witness in the case. Now, when the prosecutor did not confront Loftus with her prior inconsistent statements while she was on the stand in order to gain admission of this video. So the question for this court, which is one that is one of first impression as far as I can tell, is whether the still available to testify requirement in 1610.201 can be satisfied when the proponent of the evidence has released the witness from his or her subpoena, but merely tells the court that he would be able to find the witness if needed.
Mr. Mattis, did anyone ask that the witness be reobtained?
No. No, I think the fact that the defense attorney did not ask to have the witness be recalled, I don't think very much can be drawn from that fact, because in the beginning, we objected to this video coming in, number one. So we did not want it to come in. Then when it did come in, it had the effect of emphasizing Loftus's testimony, and to recall her back would only emphasize her testimony more, and I'm sure we did not want to do that.
Okay. Another question about the objection. I believe in the Attorney General's brief, they characterize that objection as having to do with impeaching one's own witness.
Yes.
And they claim that the standard of review is plain error. Is that your understanding, or do you have a different understanding of the nature of the objection?
Well, that was one objection, the you can't impeach your own witness objection. But later on, the court specifically asked defense counsel if they had any further objections before the video was admitted, and he said something to the effect of, well, as I see here, Judge, it doesn't look like there's any, nothing is inconsistent in this video, it's all consistent. And the judge said, if that's your objection, then it's overruled and we'll go ahead. So I think the argument that there weren't sufficient inconsistent statements in the video for admission, I think that objection is preserved. But anything else, my argument is just that when the defense attorney objected to the admission of the video, it alerted the court that it had to follow the requirements in 1610.201. And so the court was alerted to the issue, and therefore the remaining issues having to deal with the admissibility of the video are preserved.
Okay, so would you be fair to say that the objection preserved the issue about whether or not it was actually inconsistent, but that the fact that the witness had been released would be under a plain error standard?
I wouldn't concede that, because I think the court was on notice that we were objecting to the admission of the video on foundational grounds, and that the court had to follow the foundation before it admitted the evidence.
Counsel, even if we agree with you that there were inconsistencies between the trial testimony and the video testimony, I'm having a hard time seeing how what harm arose, since she effectively repeated a lot of her video testimony at trial. So what was the harm?
Yes, well, prior inconsistent, the harm was in several areas. Number one is, remember, this is all about Loftus, Mr. Abdullah, and Mr. Kelly's credibility. And so to have her consistent statements presented a second time allowed the prosecutor to emphasize her testimony. Everyone else only got one chance to testify. Loftus got two. The second thing is that it bolstered Loftus's credibility because the jury was able to see that shortly after this incident happened, she spoke with police and made some statements. And then at trial, she made some consistent statements that were the same. So it made her look more credible. Now, the admission of consistent statements are under normal circumstances would not even be allowed in this case because Rule 801 would have prohibited them because there is no recent charge of fabrication in this case. And the reason why 801 is there is to protect against a defendant's right to fair trial being violated by the overemphasis of certain testimony over others.
Now, was there any request that the trial court excerpt or that there be just certain excerpts of the videotaped interview played for the jury as opposed to the whole?
No, it's a very confusing record in that the defense attorney, when this was, when the prosecutor sought to admit this video, the defense attorney was totally caught off guard. He hadn't even seen the video. And so the court had to stop and allow him to read the transcript and go from there. So, yeah, there were no objections to any of the things that I'm saying are improper in the actual video itself. But that the things that are in the video goes more to the harmless analysis and not the admissibility analysis.
Thank you.
Now, switching over to, as we're talking about harm, I wanted to talk about the harm of the inconsistent statement in the video and the other statements that are on the video. The inconsistent statement, which had to do with arguably inconsistent, had to do with Mr. Abdullah's mood. And Loftus had said, you know, he was willing to do anything that day. And that was harmful because it made it seem like Mr. Abdullah was bent and would do anything to get this money for his friend, to bail out his friend. And the inconsistent statement in the video also bolstered Kelly's credibility because it established that they had planned a robbery beforehand in this hotel room, which is a crucial fact in the case, of course, because Mr. Abdullah did not, he said that there was no planned robbery. They hadn't talked about a robbery. And indeed, if the jury would have believed that there was no planned robbery, it would have had to find him not guilty in this case. Now, finally, there were inadmissible statements on the video that were neither inconsistent nor consistent with Loftus's trial testimony. In one section of the video, Loftus is talking about Kelly's out-of-court hearsay statements. She's saying that Kelly was saying, no, we don't want to rob anybody. Robbing someone is a bad idea. And that was harmful to Mr. Abdullah's case because Mr. Abdullah is saying that Kelly performed this robbery on his own. And if he's beforehand saying, I don't believe that we should rob anybody, that's a bad idea, then it damages Mr. Abdullah's credibility in the eyes of the jury.
Didn't those statements come from the telephone call from Mr. Kelly to AL?
Yes, I believe they were in the hearsay telephone call that Loftus recounted before the jury later on after this video.
Could those have been considered excited utterances on Mr. Kelly's part because of its proximity to the incident here?
When Loftus was recounting what he had said to her on the phone?
Yes.
No, Your Honor, because they're not spontaneous with the event. The prosecutor did not show that these statements were spontaneous with the event. What happened after the shooting, Mr. Kelly went to a park, had the forethought to take off his shirt and throw it in the bushes so he wouldn't be identified, so maybe gunshot residue could not be analyzed. Then he went through all of the documents that he had stolen from the victim, separated out personal documents, took the money, went to the light rail station, waited for an entire hour for the light rail to get there, then got on, then went downtown, got on a bus, stopped at Burger King, ate a burger, then went to the park to buy some marijuana, and I believe at that point is when he made the call to Loftus. So there were several events that took place in between the shooting and the call, and Mr. Kelly's actions during that brief period did not suggest that he was in any excited state at all. He was fleeing from police and getting some food, and basically it seemed like he was celebrating a successful robbery. Now, the harm in this case, the state makes just a conclusory statement that everything in this case was harmless because there was overwhelming evidence of Mr. Abdullah's guilt. And you'll see that in the brief, the state doesn't list any of this overwhelming evidence, number one. And number two, the overwhelming evidence argument ignores the fact that our Supreme Court in Usum v. People said that evidence cannot be considered overwhelming if the case is dependent on the credibility of conflicting witness testimony. And that is exactly what happened here. In conclusion, the admission of the video was error, and there is a reasonable probability that the admission of the video affected the outcome of the case. And therefore, Mr. Abdullah requestfully asked this court to reverse and remand his case back to the trial court for a new trial. And I will reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal if there are no other questions.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
You have almost 3 minutes left for rebuttal, not quite.
Good morning, and may it please the court. Carmen Moralita, representing the people in this matter. My attorney registration is 34852. I would like to begin by making two general points as to why defendant's claims fail and why this court should affirm his convictions. On appeal, defendant raises 5 claims, and none of them were preserved. And even if any error occurred, none rose to the level of plain error. Defendant was convicted only of aggravated robbery and felony murder. And as to those charges, disagree with defendant's position, the evidence overwhelmingly established that defendant and Kelly, the co-defendant, planned to rob the victim using a gun, and that the victim died in the course of or in furtherance of the robbery. In addition to Kelly's testimony, the evidence establishing defendant's guilt included Ms. Adora Loftus' testimony, evidence that defendant had the gun in the morning and also ammunition, and also at the time of his arrest, evidence that defendant has some GSR in his hands. There was a video of and testimony that defendant and Kelly argued in a liquor store shortly before the shooting. And there is also testimony of a witness who saw defendant and Kelly together in the alley right after the shooting. Additionally here, defendant testified in his own defense. So the case largely turned, I agree, upon or on his own credibility. And on that issue, the evidence also overwhelmingly refuted defendant's theory of the case that he only planned to sell some drugs to come up with the money to help Casey. I don't think there were any drugs found in defendant. There were no drugs found in Kelly, and the victim had $150, which was the amount that they needed for the to bond Casey out of jail. So moving on to the specific issues, I will address first the Ms. Loftus' prior statements. The people's position is that this issue was not preserved by a proper objection. But it's like, I'm not going to dwell on that because even if it was properly preserved, his claim fails under the harmless error standard of review. The statements were indeed inconsistent. Pre-trial, Ms. Loftus stated that defendant had suggested robbing the victim, and that day he was not himself. He was nervous, he was kind of pacing back and forth, and he was just doing crazy talk. At trial, she testified that defendant suggested scaring someone, and that he was just like any other day. I think there's a legal and factual difference between scaring someone with a gun and actually robbing someone. Scaring is more in the nature of menacing someone, and menacing, as this court knows, is not a predicate offense of felony murder.
Well, if you're scaring,
So
if you're scaring someone with a gun to take their money or to obtain money, isn't that robbery in layperson's terms?
Oh, I don't know if that's robbery in layperson's terms, but it's definitely not in legal terms, because menacing and robbery have different mental states and different elements. And again, I think because this was a robbery case, and because defendant denied any involvement in the robbery, I think the use of the specific word "robbery" has specific, special or significance in the case. So I think that it was that in those specific aspects, the testimony was inconsistent. But again, in any event, the error was either not plain or was harmless, because the video, and I just want to point this to the court, it was only 4 minutes long, the video of Adora and Ms. Loftus. And I think it was properly admitted, I mean, the entire video for context, because otherwise it would have been confusing for the jury to make sense of the two specific inconsistent statements. So again, it was only 4 minutes long.
Well, was it necessary to admit the entire video, though? I mean, here you've got two statements that you've identified as inconsistent, and so that justifies the admission of basically 4 minutes of bolstering testimony?
I think yes, Your Honor. Again, I'm saying for context, it's only 4 minutes. I don't think they would have make it work just to the two specific instances where she says, you know, defendant was saying this, or defendant was saying that. It's only 4 minutes. It was for context. Another thing,
I defer this time. Judge Hawthorne, go ahead.
Well, it was only 4 minutes.
Yeah.
I grant you that. But in that 4 minutes, AL managed to say a lot of things about what Kelly said happened, and a lot of things about what she thought each of Kelly and the defendant were thinking. And she managed to say things like the defendant was hanging out with Casey and was acting thuggish and serious, and was, what was the other term that was used? Oh, he was had a goon mentality. So there were a lot of other statements in that interview that didn't have anything to do with these inconsistent statements that you're talking about.
With all due respect, Your Honor, I think that was her trial testimony, the goonish mentality and all that.
Was
that,
it? Am I incorrect on that?
Yeah, I think that was just her trial testimony.
Okay, I stand corrected. All right.
I believe that.
I thought that was in the interview.
Bill. I guess I might be confused, but I don't think that's the claim the defendant is raising. He just complains about what.
You're right. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I have that.
Okay. Good.
Let me ask the question that I started to ask when I interrupted Judge Hawthorne. If you're looking at two prior inconsistent statements, mm-hmm. and you're saying that all this other stuff needed to come in context, why couldn't the sponsoring detective have testified about those two inconsistent statements, and thereby precluding bringing all this other evidence in?
Well, I think that what happened here, again, one of the reasons is that this issue was, I don't think it was properly brought to the court's attention. So it was kind of sloppily discussed, and when Detective Gibbs was testified, said something about her trial testimony is not exactly what she said during the interview. It was kind of defense counsel at that time, I think, said they cannot impeach its own witness. So I think that's why kind of came everything, because again, it wasn't properly preserved, so I don't think the trial court was properly put on notice of what the actual claim or complaint was. So I think that was the initial reason as to why that happened. So, and again, but ultimately, I don't think that 4 minutes of her pretrial statement could have prejudiced the defendant either on the plain error or harmless error. She testified at trial. She was subject to cross-examination, and the defendant thoroughly cross-examined her. So ultimately, there was no prejudice to the defendant.
Well, let me go back to my question about the interview, because now I'm looking back at the interview statements that were made during that 4 minutes.
Okay.
When Kelly was saying AL was saying in the interview that Kelly said, let's not be stupid, pretty much like, let's not go around trying to rob people.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure that's what Kelly was thinking. Defendant was willing to do anything. In my heart, I didn't think defendant would shoot somebody, but that's what happened.
Mm-hmm.
But that day he was like thinking, I'm willing to do anything to get Casey out of jail, which was completely inconsistent with Kelly's version of what happened, right?
I don't think it was completely inconsistent with Kelly.
Now, I mean, it was inconsistent with the defendant's version of what happened. AL was bolstering and supporting what Kelly said.
Yes. I mean, it was inconsistent with what
And these were not inconsistent statements from her trial testimony.
I don't think so.
Right.
Those were not inconsistent statements. But again, she testified at trial. I don't think that any bolstering could have prejudiced the defendant to the point of requiring reversal under either plain error or the harmless standard error review. Again, I think she testified at trial, Kelly testified at trial, and I think that defendant could cross-examine them, and also the jury could assess their credibility firsthand. And again, the fact that the defendant testified in his own defense, he put his own credibility as issue separate from the other witnesses.
Do you have a response to, do we have a response to Mr. Mattis's argument that under Usum, when it's a battle of credibility, that it's really impossible to find an error like this, either harmless or plain?
I disagree. I think that maybe as to the first degree murder after deliberation, maybe that might have been a closer case, because we only had, I believe Kelly's testimony that it was the defendant, the one who pulled the trigger. But again, as to the aggravated robbery and felony murder, I think that the evidence was overwhelming. As I said at the beginning, it was not just Kelly's testimony and Adora's testimony, but there is also physical evidence, and there's also other circumstantial evidence that when compared with defendant's testimony and his theory of defense, greatly undermined that, because when you look at the entire evidence, it's just defendant's, theory just didn't make sense, looking at all the evidence, not just based on the specific testimony of Ms. Loftus or the specific testimony of the co-defendant. And again, I think the evidence overwhelmingly established the two charges for which defendant was convicted. And again, maybe as to the first degree murder, it was a closer case, but he was not convicted. He was acquitted of first degree murder after deliberation.
Would you still maintain that the other evidence was overwhelming in light of the expert witness's testimony about the gunshot residue particles on the defendant's hands being so minimal as compared to what would have been expected after 5 shots being fired?
I'm not saying that it was overwhelming, just that piece of evidence. That's just additional circumstantial evidence, the fact that he has some GSR together with the other evidence. I'm not saying that alone, because as you said, they only found a little amount of GSR. But again, it's circumstantial evidence, the fact that they found that, the fact that a witness saw together in the alley when he had testified that he was not in the alley, he waited somewhere else, and the fact that there's the videotape with both defendant and co-defendant kind of arguing right before the shooting. So this all tends to support the people's case that there was a planned robbery from the beginning.
But didn't the defendant say that he went into the alley after he heard shots fired? That he was smoking marijuana outside the alley after he heard shots fired? He went into the alley to see what had happened?
I don't remember exactly. I just remember, I guess, his testimony that he waited for Kelly when Kelly went in with the victim, but I don't remember exactly what he said after that. But again, that's another just piece of evidence together with everything else. And again, these are mostly evidentiary claims, and both Kelly and Ms. Loftus testified, and you are arguing for plain error. So I don't think that any claim, I mean, any of the issues or any of the, if any error, prejudice defendant to the, you know, to the point of requiring reversal.
Well, we're reviewing for plain error
if we
agree with you that the defendant did not preserve his objection to the inconsistent statements.
Yes, as to everything else, the people and the defendant agree that is reviewed for plain error. Out of the five claims, the people and defendant agree for our review for plain error. There is only the one about inconsistent statement that we disagree. But as to everything else, we are in agreement. I would like to quickly touch on the excited utterance. There's evidence in the record that Kelly called Ms. Loftus within 10 minutes of the shooting, and actually this was elicited during his cross-examination. So during direct, he testified that he called Ms. Loftus right after the shooting. That's also what Ms. Loftus testified. But again, during the his cross-examination, he said specifically said 10 minutes, within 10 minutes of the shooting. And the record supports that he was under the stress of the excitement. Ms. Loftus testified that he was crying, he was hysterical, he was very scared, and he was huffing and puffing. So I think the record supports that testimony, those statements, were admissible as an excited utterance. And again, this court is reviewing for plain error, so the trial court did not have an opportunity to rule on that issue. But again, the record supports that indeed he was it was an excited utterance. And unless this court has any other questions, the people ask that defendant's convictions be affirmed. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you.
I forgot to mention during my opening statements that, and Judge Hawthorne, you mentioned it in your question earlier, that another harmful thing on the video was Loftus saying that she believed Kelly's version of the story and that Mr. Abdullah shot the victim. And this was very persuasive for the jury, because Loftus, as the prosecutor emphasized in closing, Loftus was friends with both of these boys. She loved both of them. They had survived on the streets together, homeless. She knew them both very well. And so her opinion saying, I believe one over the other, I'm sure carried a lot of persuasive weight with the jury. Now, as far as the overwhelming evidence goes, just to rebut a little bit of what the state had to say, Mr. Abdullah did not dispute that he had a weapon that day. But he said he wanted to sell that weapon, not use it on somebody to get money. He did have the weapon in the pack after the robbery, but what he testified that the shooting occurred in the alley. He went to see what was going on. Kelly was at that point standing over the body with the gun, and Kelly put the gun in the backpack and gave the backpack to Mr. Abdullah, and they took off. The fact that both boys were seen in the alley after the shooting, that one witness did say that at one point he saw both boys in the alley, but another witness, who was the reporting party, after the shots happened, he went out and almost immediately saw Kelly there, dead body on the ground, and Kelly rifling through the guy's pockets, putting money into the backpack, and no testimony about Mr. Abdullah being there. And let's see. Finally, you know, the video was only 4 minutes, but it was packed full of prejudicial evidence that in a close case like this, I think affected the jury's credibility determination, swayed the case toward the prosecutor. If there's no further questions, I'll waive the rest of my time.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Thanks to both counsel. The time that you spend preparing and presenting the arguments is always very helpful to the court. This case will stand submitted, and an opinion will issue in due course.